Before I begin the sermon, I want to just make a comment that when you study to preach a sermon, it seems like you see a lot of things that tie into the sermon as you go through the day. This morning alone, I got here and looked at the bulletin, and it touches on my sermon. Class this morning stepped all over my sermon. The prayer Todd led makes reference to things that are in my sermon. The reading this morning that I did earlier that was pre-selected months ago is one of the verses in my sermon. But we learn by repetition. So if you've heard this, something similar to what I'm about to preach this morning, that's not a bad thing. That's good. So let's take what we learn and make application. What's the most valuable thing that you possess? Think about that. Is it your house? Is it maybe you've got a couple of cars? Maybe you've got a retirement or investment account that's you're hoping that one day you can retire and it'll benefit you at that time. It might be worth some money. Maybe you've got a lot of jewelry or a collection of something that's valuable, and that would be most people's first thought as to what's the most valuable thing they possess. But I'll suggest, and being Christians, maybe you're not thinking the same way but as the world might think, but let me suggest that your most valuable possession that you have is your time. And I know I was reminded that there's been a recent sermon about that too. So I wasn't trying to correct that sermon. I probably wasn't here when it was preached. Yet our time is the most valuable thing, and I'll make this argument. You may think and you might correctly think the soul is more important, and we're going to touch on that. So the reason I said time, and that's subjective. Is important because it's valuable because we don't know how much we have. We can gauge all those other things I mentioned earlier. We can look at a spreadsheet, or we can go to the blue book to see what our cars are worth, or we can go to realtor and find out what our house is worth. We don't know how much time we have, so it's an unknown quantity that we have of this entity. But it's, if you think about it, very wealthy people, who they would have given up every bit of wealth they had just for a little more time. So in that sense, I think we can say time is the most valuable thing that we have. And I'm going to try to prove that here. As Todd already covered this morning in our class, rich or poor, we're all given the same amount of time each day. We got 24 hours in the day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. The unknown is we don't know how many years we have, and we don't know when during this 24-hour period that our time will end. So that's our time on earth is precious. I was speaking about when you prepare a sermon. I was in the car, went to pick up dinner last night, and there was a commercial came on, and it talks about how valuable our time is. We know your time is valuable, therefore we offer this product. Don't waste your time doing this when you could have our product, and it will make your time more valuable. So time does have a value. So the question is, how are we spending that value? How are we spending our time? What are we exchanging for that time? Excuse me. Regarding those earthly possessions we talked about, it's not a sin to have them. As a matter of fact, God, there's several references in the Bible that acknowledge that it's okay to have these things. He says it's our reward for our labor. Before we get into this Ecclesiastes, in 1 Timothy, he talks about this. You have to kind of look at it to see that's what he's saying, but it says in 1 Timothy 6, verse 17, Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty or false security of riches, but on God who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. And it's those last couple of words that I would want to say, that it's okay to have these riches. You've worked for them. You've labored for them. We're told to labor and to gain things, but we're to use them properly. And he says it's okay to enjoy those things. And then the verse that we see here in Ecclesiastes, the writer Solomon talks about life under the sun. He tries everything, and he observes in Ecclesiastes 5, verses 18 and 19. Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself and all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of this life which God has given him, for this is his reward. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, he's also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. So it's okay to have these things and to enjoy them. So we're not condemning having a house and a car and all these other things that we talked about earlier. We want to talk about redeeming. When you redeem something, you exchange one value for another. So we're going to talk about redeeming our time in Ephesians 5, 15 and 16, which we talked about this morning already in our class. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. The word time, in that next to last line, is not the Greek word chronos, C-H-R-O-N-O-S, that it typically means we think of a period of time. It's the word kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S, which, although it can be defined as time, it more properly means opportunity, a season of opportunity. So making the most of your season of opportunities, because the days are evil. So the thought is, we're exchanging blank for an opportunity. When opportunities, and we touched on this in class, when opportunities come, we can either ignore them, we can go along with them, you know, say it's a negative opportunity, or we can insert something positive in there. So you're exchanging blank for opportunity. It can be good, it can be evil, maybe it's sloth, maybe it's laziness you insert in there. You had an opportunity, but you were lazy and did not take advantage of it. So the point here in Ephesians 5, 15 and 16 is, as Christians, we're to make the most of these daily opportunities that we have. So how should we redeem or exchange? What should we exchange our time for? I'm going to offer three suggestions. There's others, but for the sake of this being an approximate 30-minute lesson, we're going to limit it to these three. And I'll tell you now, the first one's going to take longer than the second and third, so don't panic. We need to invest in our soul, in our family, and we need to invest in our brethren. And we're going to look at each one of these separately. So as far as our soul goes, we'll start with Mark 8, 34 through 37. And he summoned the multitude and his disciples and said to them, "If anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life shall lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel shall save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" Point is there any amount of money, is there anything on this earth that has the value of one soul? And I think the implied answer to this is absolutely not. Jesus says it's not. So I'm not going to argue with that. So the soul, talking about valuable things, the soul is the most important. You could argue that's the most important thing that you've got, but for our argument of time. We're saying how time can affect our soul. In our Wednesday night class, we've been studying the book of Hebrews. A couple of weeks ago, we were in Hebrews 5, and we actually touched on this then. It says, for though in verses 12 through 14, for though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again for someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. We talked about what it takes to mature as a Christian. You have to get those first principles. You have to know who God is and who Christ is and what they did for us and to learn to love them. But you got to keep moving. You can't just stop at that. You have to mature and grow. Just like we talked about in class, how you're thrilled to see a newborn baby, but if you came back in 3 years and there's no change, then you're worried about them. In a spiritual level, we feel the same way. If you learn enough to become a Christian and somebody comes back 3 or 4 years later and you haven't moved past that, then you haven't matured, and that's dangerous to the soul. So how to do that? It takes an investment of time and effort. You don't just, because I've been a Christian for, I don't know, 50 years, close to it now, I didn't grow any just because of the years have gone by. The only growth that I've experienced is through my personal study and work and participation and going through difficulties. That's the only way that we're going to grow and mature as Christians is to have our senses trained, as it says there in verse 14, and because of practice. Take part in things. Get involved in classes. And that's another thing. If you're not taking advantage of the classes that we have here, I highly recommend it. That I've seen some growth in the individuals just in those classes, and I think it benefits everybody. It benefits those of us who teach, and it also benefits the students, for I've learned as much from the students as they have from me, I'm sure. So come to the classes. Take advantage of the opportunities that you have here at McRaven Road to help in your growth and development. How do we invest in our soul? As we said, daily study and meditation, daily prayer, our daily lives, just going through activities in our daily lives, and of course our worship. I do want to read, I'm not going to read all these, I want to read the psalmist in Psalm 119. And we're going to talk about meditation here in a few minutes, but you're wondering what should I meditate on, read some of these, read some Psalms and Proverbs, and just stop and meditate on them. The Proverbs are filled with things that are deep, but they're just one or two sentences, and then they move on to something else. But if you're thinking, well, I don't know what to meditate on, read a proverb, read a psalm, and meditate on them. Just look what the psalmist says in these verses, and think about this as you think about studying on your own and your own daily growth. He says in verse 97, oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. Your commandments make me wiser than my enemies, for they are mine. I have more insight than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the aged, because I have observed your precepts. I have restrained my feet from every evil way, that I may keep your word. I have not turned aside from your ordinances, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, yes, sweeter than honey to my mouth. From your precepts I get understanding, therefore I hate every false way. The psalmist had spent some time learning God's word and meditating on it, and it said because of that he knew more than his teachers, he knew more than the older people in his generation, because they had not taken the time to do this. But because he did stop and observe, he didn't just go through his life and just let everything get buried. He spent some time in meditation to God. Therefore, he grew spiritually. Back on the daily prayer, in James 5:13, it basically is that one, if you recall, it says, if any man is suffering, let him pray. If any man is sick, let him pray. If any man is in sin, let him pray. And just talks about the power of prayer. And we have our list of sick on our bulletin, and it's the ones that we know of. You could pray for a half hour or more just addressing the needs of those people. So there's always things that we can dedicate some time to prayer. On our daily life, in Galatians 2:20, it says, you probably know that song, I mean that verse, but if I tried to quote it, I'd probably end up doing it to the tune. It's, I have been crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. I'm afraid I'm going to break out in song here in a second. But if you think about what that passage says, that Christ now lives in me. And he doesn't live in you just because you went underwater one time and you were baptized. He lives in you because you studied his word and you learned what it means. And you made application and you've practiced it out in the world. Somebody says something, you now know enough to correct them in the proper way, or point out some things that maybe they didn't realize. This is my class Friday. I told you I teach it at work. We had a new student, and we were talking about the crucifixion of Christ. I don't know what I said, but she had never been there before. And at the end, she said, I learned some things today I didn't know. I don't know what it was specifically, but when we study and we learn and we have an opportunity to teach, people do listen. They do pay attention. So we might be able to teach others. If you're wondering how you can invest in your soul, how you can redeem your time, I found, some of you may know Colley Caldwell from down in Florida. He wrote a good commentary on the book of Ephesians. And regarding to Ephesians 5, 15, and 16, I was going to bring the book and read it, but I'm just, there's one small quote I want to make. He says, we can redeem the time by doing good for others, by learning more fully God's will, by doing honest work, by prayer and meditation for improvement, by reflecting God's will in an upright life, by teaching the word, by edifying the weak, and by all those other responses to God's call for righteousness living among his people. So there's lots of ways that we can redeem our time here on this earth that will benefit us and the cause of Christ. Okay, I told you that was the long one. So we're going to talk about investing in family. This will be a lot shorter. Ephesians 6:4, I'm going to focus on fathers here. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. You think about things in the Bible talking about fathers and mothers. Mothers is usually more of the nurturing nature, and the fathers are told to discipline and to instruct the children. I'll make this comment. I was trying to think back of all my kids are all grown up, and just thinking about their friends and the people that I've known in my 63 years. The children who have gone on to be the best, in my opinion, typically had, not this is a general statement, typically had a father who was active in their lives. There's some exceptions to every rule, but the ones that spent more time with the kids, usually the kids turned out to be more, the Christian ones, be more spiritually minded and grew up strong in the Lord. Like I say, I'm sure you can think of cases where that didn't happen. Perhaps someone didn't have a father and they still turned out great. And I'm not saying this is 100%. But the ones that I knew, it just seemed like the fathers who invested time in their children are the ones who, the children that turned out the best overall. There's no guarantee that they'll still turn out best, but I'm just saying you're going to give them a much better opportunity if the fathers spend the time with the children. Let them see you reading your Bible. Let them hear you pray. Teach them how to do these things, and hopefully it'll become habit in their life. The worst thing they can do is see you talk one way up here on Sunday and then live a different way the other 5-6 days of the week. So this is, like I say, more focused on fathers to be the spiritual leaders of the house. In Joshua, we all know this. We may have this one up on a sign in our house somewhere, at least part of it, the last part. Joshua is the head of his household. He was the patriarch at this stage. And in Joshua 24:15, he says, "And if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourself today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." As a family, as a father, we need to make a stand for God and let our children know that. And the third one, invest in brethren. I need to be investing time and effort in you, and hopefully you in me. The way we do that, one in Galatians 6:10, it tells us to do that. "So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, especially to those who are of the household of faith." We're not supposed to be evil or bad or indifferent toward anybody, but any opportunity that we have to help one another as brethren, we need to take advantage of that. And it's basically a command there, so it's not just a suggestion. 1 Thessalonians 5:11-13, he said, Paul says, "But therefore encourage one another and build up one another, just as you also are doing." "But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction, and that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Live in peace with one another." We can encourage one another and build up one another. And this congregation is good at that, I've got to say. I've received cards and calls and thank yous and whatever, and I'm not good at returning. I'm not good at cards. Not that great at calls. I try to encourage while I see you face to face, but some of you are very, very good at that. And some of the ladies in particular who can't participate publicly are doing an outstanding job of doing the things behind the scenes, providing food, visiting, sending cards, calling, and I want to let you know that I appreciate that, and I'm sure everyone who receives these things do. One of you sent a card to my mother recently, and I appreciate that, and she acknowledged it, and she appreciates that. So it's very kind, and it's something that we should be doing for one another. If we're not going to encourage each other, who is going to encourage us? Most of the world, I shouldn't say that, but they're not going to be not supportive of us because by our lives, sometimes we condemn the things they do. Hebrews 10:24-25. "Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together as the habit of some is, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." We are to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. And like I say, I think we do that here, but I would encourage you and exhort you that to be here so we can stimulate one another to love and good deeds. 1 hour a week is not enough to receive and to give this encouragement and exhortation. So Those of you who are not taking advantage of all the opportunities we have here, the classes and the any other the meetings and so forth, I encourage you now to please take advantage of that. It's going to help in your growth, your spiritual maturity. We read this. This was in the reading that I did a little while ago, James 4:14. Our life is a vapor. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Sometimes we think life is boring, it's dragging on, or the days and weeks are. But if you, those of us who have achieved a certain age, you look back, it seems like it's just, we should still be in high school or just that. You know, it's flown past. So we understand this verse that it is like a vapor. It just seems like it's come and gone so quickly. So let's don't get caught up in the day-to-day things, but let's look at the big picture and try to improve our lives. And finally, once again, Solomon in Ecclesiastes 12, as he concludes the book about life under the sun, he says, the conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. Time is not guaranteed to any of us. If you're not in a right relationship with God now, there's no guarantee that you'll have another opportunity. Time is that valuable. We don't know when we're going to lose it. The opportunities get fewer every day. We lose an opportunity. So we have less opportunities now than we did yesterday. So let's take advantage of that. If you're not a Christian, we encourage you to become one. If you are a Christian and you have a public sin that needs to be known so we can pray for you, we encourage you to come now as we stand and as we sing.